All right, guys, welcome back to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast. A special episode, an Augusta National Masters special episode.
Just sounds good, doesn't it?
Done it. I'm here with Seb Carmichael Brown. We've been here at Augusta, been invited by our good friends at Mercedes-Benz. And what a hell of a week. Honestly, we've been treated quite literally like royalty.
Yeah, it's incredible, mate. I mean, we saw a bit of it last year, didn't we? This setup they have here, not just at the golf tournament, which, oh, wouldn't I love to be able to show the guys what it's like inside the ropes at the Mercedes cabin? Maybe one day, but not this year, but we can tell you a little bit about it, can't we?
We can. In this podcast as well, in this very chair, Masters winner Bernhard Langer joins us. Now, his fellow... Well, he is a Mercedes-Benz ambassador, and it's just great to chat to Bernhard. We've just finished that interview, and some of the stories is telling of his time playing in the Masters. This was supposed to be his final Masters ever. He was supposed to be walking down the fairway the tomorrow or Sunday and waving everyone goodbye, and that would have been his last Masters appearance. But he's been out injured, Achilles injury, so he's now going to have to postpone that to next year. So we've been talking a little bit about that. We'll come on to that. However, also, we've got a little cheeky giveaway. If you want to win 3 signed Titleist Pro V1 Mercedes-Benz golf balls signed by Bernhard Langer, you've got to leave a comment and subscribe to the podcast channel. And we'll also throw in this wonderful brochure. This is an 88th Masters Tournament Journal, a special edition just for Mercedes-Benz.
That's a coffee table special right there. That's going to look so... Look at the colours, the Masters green and the blue on your coffee table with that signature.
Beautiful. So be sure to like the video, leave a comment down below, and be subscribed to the podcast channel, and we'll pick a winner very, very soon. But just this week, we went to practice day yesterday.
Yeah,
we got to walk around the golf course, yep. The same golf course that, listen, you've all heard it before, that me and Seb got to play last year.
Don't have to talk about it.
And it was our first trip back on the grounds to be able to just walk around the complex. I mean, it was really more... What's the right description for it? I almost absorbed it more yesterday. Been lucky enough now to go, this is my third visit. And almost the first few visits, your mouth is just open and you just can't believe you're there. Yeah. I think this time, for me going, I was like appreciating things that I might not seen before and going, oh, that's new, that's different. I've not spotted that before. And just being able to appreciate the contours of the facility, to be able to appreciate how friendly and nice the patrons are and all the staff at the hospitality and just the grounds around the store. We spent some money in the store again, which
too much probably.
Is ridiculous. I've got a giveaway of that coming on Instagram as well. But yeah, I feel like you just absorb it in and you soak it in, and it's just such a special place.
Sure, I think it might be is that, you know, we've talked about the same feeling. I certainly have when you step on those greens for the first time and you got to hit on them, and I was nervous, but equally I was just so excited. There's so much adrenaline in your body that you lose a little bit of control and you're not comfortable. And I think that when you first come, I remember the first time I came in 2013 with my dad, I ran around like a schoolboy. Like, I was so excited. It must have driven him nuts, to be honest. I was like, Dad, let's go here, we've got to check this.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Like, just panting so much. And obviously, this is my fourth year now, and it feels just as magical every single time. But the giddiness you get more comfortable with it and you start to feel a little bit more relaxed here, and that allows you, I think, to take in the more beauty. You sit and, you know, you do take in the surroundings a little bit more. So maybe that's what it is.
You quite literally smell the flowers. You
smell the azaleas.
We also
had a few there as well.
We are. There's a drink.
Oh, my favourite.
There is a drink that's named after the wonderful azalea. I'm pointing at that plant, which is not an azalea, but
close enough.
It's pink in colour. It's got vodka, lemonade and grenadine in. And here at the Masters, when you have it, it's a very, very special, fruity, sweet drink.
Refreshing as well.
Refreshing.
So
refreshing. That's the reason why we drank them.
Yep.
It is refreshing.
Hydration.
Yeah, it's the 100% reason. We also got to walk around the par 3 course.
Yeah.
So the par 3 course, par 3 tournament was on yesterday. Walked a little bit around with the English group of Tommy Fleetwood. UK group with Tommy Fleetwood and Shane Lowry.
Yep.
Even that, unfortunately, UK group, an Ireland group,
yeah, of course.
Of Tommy Fleetwood and Shane Lowry. Also got to see Matt Fitzpatrick, Sir Nick Faldo, Tyrrell Hatton. We didn't witness any live hole-in-ones.
No, heard a few, didn't we?
We heard a few, albeit I think there were six yesterday.
And I think Bryson, who's currently, as we film this, leading the tournament, he had the slam dunk hole-in-one.
He had a slam dunk hole-in-one for three.
Oh, of course it was.
He put his first in the water and then slam dunked it for a three.
That's right.
Friend of the show, however, of the podcast and the main channel, Ricky Fowler, actually won the par 3 tournament. Now, some of you listening will probably know this fact, some of you won't. Nobody has ever gone from winning the par 3 tournament to then going winning the Masters that same year.
Someone's going to do it eventually.
Not be Ricky?
Why not Ricky?
Why
answer
not
me that.
Ricky? I would love him to win it.
I would too.
Now, we've had a couple of little bets.
Yeah.
Should we talk about those now?
Yeah, we can do.
Because a couple of mine aren't doing great. Not going
to
lie to you.
Neither are mine, to be honest. But there's one I had that was a lot. I always like that there's people talk about the Masters. There's so many regular contenders. It's the most, you know, talked about golf tournament in the world, probably, especially for those that are not, you know, super, super into golf all year round. So everyone's got an opinion. There's always the same names that come around. What I quite like to do, and the betting markets reflect that, you know, Scottie Scheffler was like 3 or 4 to 1 in a huge tournament. It's ridiculous. There's no point betting on him. I like to find people that are like 30, 40, 50 upwards to one, go each way. One of my guys, Corey Connors, I mean, hopefully he hasn't thrown it in the bin since we filmed this, but as we film it, he's gone a couple under, got him over 100 to one.
That's crazy.
Happy with that.
My five picks are Max Homa.
Nice.
And there's no rhyme or reason to these.
Yeah.
I've not gone into stats. I've not gone into previous performance. I've just gone on almost likability factor.
Vibe check.
Yeah. I see Max Homa in a green jacket on Sunday?
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? That's how I've gone with this. Sergio Garcia, I've gone with a bit of performance recently because his game, since obviously filming myself, has massively improved. And
yeah,
obviously,
natural.
There's got to be a good luck charm. We've seen that before with players that have been on the channel. Tom Kim. Only because I liked him on the full swing.
Should I get the leaderboard out? The guys see the leaderboard.
Yeah, well, also it'll be out of date by the time.
Yeah, true.
Tom Kim, who I just like him on the Netflix show.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Big fan of
good
him.
Episode that.
Minwoo Lee,
yeah,
friend of the channel. He has broke his finger, however,
yeah,
and he started this today terribly. So I think that's a terrible bet. And then Shane Lowry.
Again, Shane Lowry, a lot of people picking Shane. A lot of people picking Shane.
I feel like on form, and people will probably correct me, I don't think he's quite trending in the right direction. But again, could I see him in a green jacket on Sunday? Absolutely I could.
Why not? I mean, look, the guys watching this now, either the end of round one or the start of round two, there's a couple of stats. It's like, I mean, for example, the last each of the last 18 winners have been tied 11 or better after round one, and it's something very, very similar to that. Not quite as prolific, but very, very similar to that, that we're in the top 10 after round two.
That's a mad
stat. So by the time you guys are watching this, you look at that leaderboard, you're going to sort of know it's probably, based on history, going to be in that top 10-ish that are going to win it.
That is honestly
nuts, isn't it?
Mind-blowing that is even a stat.
We've got here, some of these are going to be post-dated by the time this goes out, but it's a few Gates stats I love watching. I'll have to shout him out, Justin Ray on X or Twitter. I get a lot of the stats I like to talk about from him, so shout out to Justin, a few of those from him. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you should do, because he gives some absolute pearlers every tournament, but especially this week.
And how are you, pal? Have you had a good year since I last spoke to you? Last time we filmed was in Germany.
Yeah, it was, wasn't
it? Did the podcast in the Mercedes-Benz Museum. You had a good year? Is your golf trending well?
I had some great filming early part of the year. I went out to Hawaii with Adidas. I filmed with Morikawa and Oberg, which was incredible. Had a few trips out to Dubai. I've done a few little bits. There's a couple of little projects I'm working on in the background with a few people that might be coming out soon to keep an eye out for. But yeah, my game is starting to ramp back up again. We had a little game last night.
I actually hate playing against you.
I'm pleased with that. I think you saw in the last podcast episode. I take that as a compliment.
I think you are the most frustrating golfer in the world to play against. There's a golf course down the road from here that we've been to. We went a couple of times last year. We've been so far once this year. Westlake Golf and Country Club. It's gorgeous.
Beautiful.
If that was in pristine condition, you wouldn't be a fool if you would mistake it for Augusta.
Well, we can talk about that because we are fortunate enough to, by the way, have played Augusta.
If you haven't
heard. And also talked a little bit about the hospitality cabin called Firethorn, which is where we're based for Mercedes at the week. It's just down the side of the 10th where Rory sort of famously hit that drive the year he didn't quite get the job done when he maybe should have. And they have a replica of 18 outside it. So we've actually been putting on Augusta greens this week. And you know what? At Westlake, they're not too different, are they?
They're not.
Not quite as fast.
Yeah.
But the surface is very comparable. Beautiful
and,
place.
We had a little match, a little 9-hole match. And Seb missed every single green. For the first 4 or 5 holes and got up and down from everywhere to stay level par. You finished the 9 holes with 9 consecutive pars.
So boring, isn't it?
I didn't do that. I'm going for speed and distance at the moment. I hit a pitching wedge into a par 5. I'm bombing driver as hard as I can at the moment. I feel like I'm hitting the ball further than I ever have done in the last 10 years. And I go and shoot 3 over. So Seb beats me over 9 holes and he's 1 up in the series of the matches this week.
A lot more to come though.
However, we also played with a little kid.
Oh my God,
do you know his
surname?
He's called Connor.
I don't know his second name. We can find out, maybe put it
this,
in here.
This little boy we played with, he's 7 years old. He's called Connor. He looks like a mini tour pro.
Yeah, but also, he got to play a part. He made a part on the par 3 yesterday.
Yeah.
He got invited by Grayson Murray. Grayson Murray was hitting balls at Westlake. Connor is just this like really charismatic 7-year-old. The stuff he was coming out with was incredible.
Sorry, the camera just stopped recording there, so we just had to pick that back up. Yeah, I mean, the kid was sensational. He really was. And it wouldn't surprise me. In 10 years, we see him being announced on the first tee. Augusta local. Connor, I'll have to get his surname. 17-year-old, making his debut, and he goes and wins the Masters
by 10. And we have
10.
Signed balls from him.
We've both got
a signed ball from him at the end. What a life he's living. And yeah, it's going to be fun to... If we keep coming back to the Masters, we'll keep playing with him, and be able to document his progress.
Exactly. Year on year. Right, guys, without further ado, let's listen to this wonderful interview we had. The sit-down chat, very brief, very relaxed chat with Bernard Langer. Thanks to Mercedes-Benz for setting this up. Thanks to Mercedes-Benz for the whole week. And again, if you want to sign the Mercedes-Benz, if you want to win the Bernard Langer signed golf balls, which actually just been vanished off this desk, all you need to do is like this video, subscribe to the podcast channel, and leave a comment down below. Without further ado, this is Bernard Langer, the legend himself. Bernard, thanks for joining us on the podcast. This is really exciting.
Yeah, thank you.
Obviously, we're here in Augusta, the week of the Masters, the 88th Masters. How are you enjoying your week?
Well, I'd rather be out there playing.
I can imagine.
we know I got a torn Achilles tendon, so I'm out of action and have to postpone till next year. But it's still fun being here, just to be a part of the tournament. To be a past champion here is really something special. They treat us very well, and there's lots of privileges. And you know, having lunch with my whole family, they're all here, my 4 kids and 2 of the grandkids are here, so we're having a good time. Thank you.
Because this was going to be your final Masters this year.
It was, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's I finally committed that the course is too long for me.
Getting longer all the time as well.
Yeah, and I'm not enjoying hitting 3 woods and 2 hybrids into these par 4s, but we'll do it next year one more time and say farewell.
How are you mentally prepared to go in for this being your final Masters? And obviously now you've almost got to start that whole process again.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can, and actually mentally prepare myself, to tell you the truth. I've never done anything like that. I've never said farewell anywhere. And this year was going to be farewell from Augusta and farewell from the European Tour in July. So I don't know. I'm going to see what emotions that brings up. And I'm sure it's going to be bittersweet. But I always said I don't want to just be a number out there. You know, if I'm not competing anymore, I don't want to be seen shooting 80 and 79 and miss the cut by 10 and just be, you know, near the end of the field.
How's recovery going?
Very well, thanks for asking. Yeah, I'm 9 weeks, 2 months basically, after surgery, and I'm fully weight bearing. I got rid of the boot. Wow. I can walk, and I've actually started practicing 10 days ago. So I'm very excited to hopefully be back in action within 1 or 2 months, maybe 3 at the most.
Because it's quite rare. Seb comes from the world of football, and it's quite often that footballers get injuries. It's quite rare that golfers do get an injury that puts them out of play, really.
Well, especially with Achilles, that doesn't happen very often, and it didn't happen during golf. It happened at pickleball.
Pickleball.
But it's a very common injury amongst basketball players and football players, and you know, anywhere where you, even the bobsled teams, they have these on a regular basis because they have to push off or squash players. When I had rehab, I saw a 23-year-old professional woman's squash player, and she says, yeah, it's my second one. I had one 2 years ago over here, now it's this one. So it happens a lot.
And is the drive still there to practice?
It is. You know, I was wondering, because I've had, well, 9 weeks off already, and I was laying on the couch basically for a number of weeks, and the drive is there. I'm working very hard for a comeback, and I'm convinced I can do it. And I still love it, and I miss competing. And I still think I have several years on the Champions
Tour. You know what,
Rick, tour.
I can see next year, walking up 18, a Wolf of Wall Street moment. I ain't leaving. I ain't going anywhere. He's going to be a hard thing to let go of, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't an easy decision.
You know, that's
you.
What Gary Player told me many years when it was his last tournament at Augusta. He announced it, and then he went out and shot 78 or something. He comes into the locker, and I had a late tea time. I'm just eating lunch. And he goes, burn it. I made the worst mistake in my life. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, what
have you done?
What's this serious thing? He goes, you know, I've announced my last Masters, and I shot 78 today. I think I should have gone another year or two.
If a few putts could have dropped, I would have shot 72.
Exactly. If and when and could and should, right?
Have you really noticed the lengthening of the golf course? Obviously, you've played it. How many Masters have you actually played in?
It's going to be my 43rd year next year, and I've played 41 of them, I think, at that point, or 40. I'm not sure. We'll have to check that out. But I saw something on television last night, how they lengthened the course. So up until 2001 or 5, the course was under 7,000 yards, 69 something.
It's
7,550. And the unique thing about Augusta is where they measure from the plates, there's room behind the plates. Mm-hmm. So the chairman said, you know, we're playing 7,550. We can easily go to 76 or even more any day we want to, because we have 10, 12 yards on every tee box. We could go further back, which most courses are measured from the very back plate of grass.
I think he said in an interview this week that he can foresee himself a year not too far away where he plays 8,000 yards.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's trying. Yeah.
Frightening.
He said that he could see where they don't want to go more than 8,000. So that's, you know, they're talking about bringing the ball back, or, you know, make their players hit shorter. But I found it very strange. The announcement they made last night on TV, I don't know if it's true or not, was in 2028, they're trying to bring the ball back 7 to 12 yards. Now, that's 4 years from now. In those 4 years, the players are going to gain easily those 7 or 12 yards from now till then. So then we're just back where we are right now. And what does that do? Does that help a great deal to draw back 10 yards?
It's not going to make a big difference,
14 holes, because the par threes, it doesn't matter anyways. I think if they do something, they got to do it drastically. Otherwise, they're going to have to continuously do something every 3 years.
You know? So would you agree with what Mr. Player said this week about trying to bring the ball back 60 to 50 yards?
Absolutely. I think if you do something, it's got to be at least 30 to 50 yards, at least, to have an impact. Otherwise, you're just at zero again in a couple of years. Because the players get stronger, bigger, more athletic. They, you know, they're on a diet. They have trainers, to have all these gadgets that shows them what's ideal spin rate, launch angle, where the weight should be, this and that. And I mean, we would have never thought that tour players should hit the ball 350-60 yards out there, and it's happening right in front of us.
I think Rory's first tee shot today was 350 yards on the first round,
and he had sweat, like, right? It rained crazy this morning, so imagine when it's firm and the ball bounces, like in at an Open Championship or something, on firm ground, it's gone 400 yards.
The first hole at Augusta become a drivable par four, could you believe?
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at St. Andrews, right? There's five holes they can drive.
Mm-hmm.
I know they can. And they do it every time they go there. So I can see the problem is where certain courses are not relevant anymore.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Unless you just accept that par is 68 instead of 72, and it's the same for everybody, so it really shouldn't matter, you know, if you look at it that way. But the major championships try to, you know, at least the U.S. Open, they pride themselves, well, you know, even par is should be more or less the winning score.
Yeah.
It's a good score, and it's always been, but that's going to change.
Interesting question, okay. Next year, your final Masters, and the chairman, as a treat to a past champion, says, Bernard, you can go and set the tee positions this year. Okay? You can go out there and you can put the length of the golf course to whatever you wish it to be. What length would you put it at where you feel like you could compete?
Where I could compete, have to go way up there, and then I probably still couldn't compete because everybody's going to be up there. You know what I'm saying? Now they're going to be driving it near the green or onto the green a couple of times. It already happens on number three.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, I played with Bryson DeChambeau. He drove the green.
Yeah.
What's the Swede? One of the tall fellows.
Oberg.
Anyway, a little older guy. He drove it past the green. I played with him. I saw it. He drove it onto the fourth tee box. And
So for you,
it really wouldn't do a great deal, you know. Would help me maybe a little bit because I'd be hitting 5-iron instead of 2-hybrid or 3-wood into some of these holes, and I might reach some par fives. But they would still have that same advantage, you know. Instead of them hitting 8-iron, they'd be hitting wedge, driving the green, or hitting whatever that much less into the par five. So,
in your words, what does make Augusta so special?
Oh, it's a lot of things. I mean, it's. Do you have enough time for this?
I think people would love to hear your take on it. Well, they will do, 100%.
First of all, it's the only major that's played at the same course year after year after year. So whoever is watching on TV or the players, it's the same place. It's the same spot. Mm. You know what to expect. You've seen it before. Even if you've never been here, you've seen it on television.
You feel like you know it.
Exactly. And that's very unique, okay, compared to all the other majors. Then the changes they have made over the years are just phenomenal. Everything they have done around the tournament, there's no tent, not one. All the structures are permanent buildings for 1 week of the year.
Crazy. It's crazy.
It's unheard of. The media center is state of the art.
Yeah, we actually got to go around it last year. It's
the driving range is phenomenal on the chipping area. The Berkman's Place, nobody has anything like that.
No.
You know what Berkman's Place
is? Not quite been accessed today yet.
Is that an invitation, Bernard?
They replicated three of the greens identical to on the golf course. I don't recall which greens. I think it's 18 and maybe 5 and then one other one. And then they have four or five restaurants.
Version, smaller version, I guess.
I think it's a replica. I think it's the same.
Wow.
And you're allowed to chip and putt and you do whatever all day long. And it's free alcohol, free food, and, well, not free. It costs $5,000 to get in there. But just, you know, just to have that. Then they bought all the land around the whole golf course. Free parking, okay?
Yeah.
Where do you get free parking for an event usually? Very seldom. Then a perimeter road around the whole place, so they control, they have cameras in the trees and all sorts of things. The food that the patrons, the spectators buy, a sandwich costs $1.50
$1.50.
Or $2.50. I mean, where do you find that?
You go
to any spectator
the prices thing.
Yeah, you pay 10, 15, 20 for a drink and for a, you know, hamburger or a sandwich or any of that, and you're $100 are gone in no time.
Yeah.
And so they treat everybody very, very, very well, and they try to make it a wonderful experience, whether it's for the players, for the spectators, even for the members of the club.
Yeah.
Then, you know, the crow's nest, right? The four amateurs or five that are make it into the field, they get to stay in the clubhouse up on top, right there on the premises for free. You know, get to eat and drink for free and have free accommodations. Amazing, yeah. You know, experience. When I first came here, they had no rough. It was the only golf course I remember in the 80s that I played on. Tournament golf was no rough. It was fairway from tree line to tree line.
No way.
Yeah, and it was, I loved it. And that I think that's what made me fall in love with Augusta right away, that I didn't have to hit out of the, you know, cabbage like at the US Open or the PGA or something. And that it was either on the fairway or you were in the pine needles. And driving was not the most important thing because the fairways were wide.
Of course.
You did get a benefit, you know, if the green is angled like number five or several others, you're better off on one side or the other for the angle of it for the second approach shot. But it wasn't, you know, narrow and tight. You just hit it somewhere, and then it was more about the second shot and innovation. And, you know, if you missed the green, you could chip with a, I used four irons, I used a six iron, I used a lob wedge, literally 6-8 clubs, a putter. You can't do that in many other major tournaments because you're in the rough. Well, you can't putt it out of the rough. You can't use a six iron out of the rough or four iron. You take your lob wedge or sandwich and flop it out of there. And that made it really a very unique experience with many, many other experiences. I mean, the trees, I don't know if you ever noticed, the trees left and right, they all lean in.
Do
they? How come do they lean in?
Well, I'm guessing to make it look more intimidating.
Absolutely, but they made the grease to grow that way. So when you take a closer look, if you take 18 and I'm hitting down 18, the right side leans in, the left side leans in. You take a close look at these trees, they cut off the branches on the outside. So now the branches are only on the inside, and it's heavy. A branch is heavy, and it pulls the tree naturally in. And I've never seen that anywhere in the world either. So they're very smart up here, and they look at they don't leave a stone unturned or leaf.
Well, we were very lucky. We were very, very lucky this time last year. We actually got to play the Monday after.
That's amazing.
After the Masters.
I've got a couple of questions about some pin positions actually before we get onto that, because we talked about the course setup and you talked about all these different things, and obviously every golf course is a very, very different transition from Thursday, the cut, through to the weekend. But it seems as though some people specifically, and there's like some players who do so well on round one but then sort of fall away, and then there's these incredible stats that I think from, I've got it right here actually, it's that of the last where is it, let's have a look here, each of the last 18 winners have been tied 11 or better after round one. And you look at some other stats, like talking about someone like Rory McIlroy, the difference between his scoring in rounds 1, 2, 3, and 4 is enormous. My two questions for you on that is, what was your favourite pin location? I know they're sort of different from year to year, but did you love the Sunday pins, etc.? But then also, what is it about the Masters as well that gets into the psychology? Because it's not just about different pins suiting different players, but is there a psychology and a type of player that will suit a Sunday setup versus a Thursday setup?
No, the setup is really not different, to tell you the truth. They generally, on tour, we have 6 very hard pins, 6 medium, and 6 easier, and they rotate them around every, you know. And here especially, it's kind of the same pins year after year. So even in practice rounds, which helps, you know, when you play a practice round, you know from watching TV or playing in the past, well, the pin's going to be somewhere here, somewhere there, over here, and you can putt and chip toward these areas and get a bit of local knowledge, what the ball, how it reacts, and where you might get it up and down and where not. So that's a big advantage where experience comes in, right? For if you played here a few times, and I think that's the one reason only one first-time winner here, which was Fuzzy Souther. Nobody else has won besides him the very first time they played, because this type of course takes some experience. But now, you know, the caddies get better, they prepare better, they ask other caddies and pick their brains, and the players pick other players' brains. So it's their first time they're going to play a practice round with some guys that have been here a long time, and find out all those you know,
nuances. Yeah,
there've been a lot of players that have specifically asked to tap into your knowledge. Is anyone that you've sort of taken under your wing and given some?
Many times where, you know, the first timers or amateurs or somebody that hasn't been here would ask for a practice round. You know, they call me up 2 or 3 months in advance and say, "Can we play, you know, 18 holes or 9 holes on Monday, Tuesday, whatever, Wednesday?" That's a very common thing around here.
So unique to golf, isn't it? Can you, you know, imagine you're competing against people and then you're asking to give help the same way? I don't think there's another sport like that.
No. Probably not. You know, if you're in tennis or somewhere on soccer, I don't think that happens very often. But
not
at all. Know.
No, it's like I say, it's incredible. And it's kind of a following question. Do you think almost all majors should follow that same pattern? Like, is the Masters so unique because it is at the same venue every single year? Should the Open, for argument's sake, be at St Andrews every single year? Could they build a kind of similar-esque to Masters of what they've achieved there?
They probably could, but they have a different philosophy. They say, we have a tradition of using 7 courses for the Open, for instance, right?
Yeah.
And we rotate those 7, and we bring it to different parts of the country and different challenges, different conditions.
Of course.
So they just have a different philosophy, and they're doing very well with that too.
Of course they are.
It's just different.
Yeah. You know? No, and
when you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
For me, you know, being able to access the open courses, because obviously we're from the UK, to be able to access those open courses is always really special. You almost get that little bit of like, we're walking down the same fairways of these legends of players, and and it is very, very special. And that's the same feeling we got last year when we're walking around the grounds of Augusta and being able to play the golf course. You're in awe and you're thinking, we're walking down the fairways of all the greats, and just being able to think, this is the place. This feels like almost St Andrews and Augusta are almost the mecca of golf, really.
True.
And we got to experience some Sunday pins. There's some very interesting ones, some very challenging ones, some more friendly ones. Like you say, 16 you'd consider as a friendly pin position on a Sunday, where 6, the par 3 down the hill, when it's on that little top plateau, and it's a crow's nest on its own.
It is. It's a tough one. You don't want to miss that one.
You can't at all. But like, I feel like the golf course is relatively fair. Like, it's not
relatively
super penal.
But, you know, they keep in unbelievable records of every shot and every birdie made and every bogey made and why.
Oh, is that
so
right?
They're continuously tweaking the golf course. Even this year, I don't know if you heard, but they changed number 2, 4, and 6 green.
Yes.
They made adjustments. And they lengthened number 2 by 15 yards. They didn't like some guys going over the bunker and down the hill and hitting 5-iron or 6-iron into a par 5. So they lengthened it. Now they're not going to carry the bunker. So now you have to take on the left side, which trees, and it runs into the down that hill into the creek.
Yeah.
A much harder tee shot now from a little bit further back. But they're continuously. I mean, the 11th green was probably just in the 40 years I've been here, they changed it 6 times. I guarantee you, where it's become more challenging. You know, they raise the green, then a little more tilt, and then if you miss the green, it's more of a uphill chip instead of a flat chip, like the chip Larry Mize made years ago.
Yeah.
When he won,
it's not there,
that
is it?
That wouldn't happen anymore.
But you don't, as a player, you know those changes have happened, but you can't see any work that's been done.
No, it looks like it's been there forever. Mm. I mean, even when they built the 13th tee box there a couple of years ago, you went back there and you go, wow, these trees are tall. You know, it looks like it's been here for 15 years, you know. And you look at the turf and it looks no different than 20 yards that way. Yeah. You know, it's just, that's what they do.
Talking about your chipping with the 6-iron and the 4-iron, is that something you've done at a lot of golf courses, or, you know, having played it before, when you talk about the lack of rough or the lack of longer grass around the greens? We've been playing a little bit at a local golf course. You even notice it there, like the type of grass and that grain around the greens makes it. I mean, I was chunking a lot of chips, for example. Is that one of the reasons you use those clubs?
Absolutely, because the grain is always into you. And there's a wonderful, so every green here, or most greens, are elevated, right? So the grass grows down the hill. Mm. So when you chip, you're chipping into the grain. So it's very hard to bounce it or do anything. It's hard to putt it. So that's why a 4-iron or 6-iron is better, because it elevates the ball initially and then it scuttles on top, or a hybrid, for instance. Mm. So you see that a lot more. And you can't do that at a US Open, or used to not. Now they have runoff areas where you can do it as well. But there's a true story about how it happened that they mowed the fairways from the tee to the green. Have you heard that one? Then I don't have to tell it.
I know.
Tell the guys might know. Yeah.
Everyone listening.
Well, it's we were at a champions dinner maybe 20 years ago, roughly, and the chairman always says a few words. He's the only non-player at the dinner, and welcomes us and says something like, "The course looks meticulously fantastic this year as usual." And we made this change and that change, and I hope you like it, and you know, if you have any comment, let us know, and you know, good luck. And as he said, if you have comments, Mr. Palmer gets up, Arnie, and goes, "Mr. Chairman, you know, we've been playing here for many years and half of the fairway is mowed away from us. If you look at old films, you see the shiny part of the fairway and the dark part, because half the fairway was mowed this way, so the grass is laying that way. The other half is mowed into you, so the grass is laying this way. So if you hit a down grain, the ball skids and runs 40, 50 yards. If you hit it into the grain off the tee, it stops within 10 or 20. So Arnie said, "You know, there's a huge difference. We're good, but we're not that good that we can always hit the down grain side. And just a foot here or a foot there gives you an advantage of 30 or losing 30 yards." Chairman agreed, nodded. The very next day, they lined up all the mowers by the green, 12 of them or whatever it takes, and they mow it into us. And it's been that way ever
since. Both sides.
But, you know, another thing, they used to get a lot of mud balls. The commentators weren't allowed to talk about it, but it was really not ideal. Okay, it was a problem here. Whenever it rained, you have clay underneath, and now the fairway is mowed into us, so the ball digs in, picks up mud. And that's luck. I mean, that's not skill. We all know, the professionals know, if you have mud left, the ball will go right.
Yeah.
But we don't know, will it go 10 yards or 50 yards right, or vice versa. And I think it shouldn't be about luck. It should be about skill.
Of course it should.
And especially in the fairway, yeah.
So what they did the last 2 years, the whole golf course, all the fairways, they put sand underneath. They filled up 3 or 4, maybe 5 inches of sand. Oh, you wouldn't God. Know it.
No.
You
no.
go out, you don't see any difference. You know, where they cut and rolled the grass off, put sand, and then put the grass on top.
Are they quite literally underlaid the whole golf course?
I would think so, because that's the best way, you know.
Because they take the whole fairway up every year, don't they? You see the photographs from the earth. There's a local company that has a drone that flies over.
I think it's either that or dormant grass.
They don't do
grass.
That usually. They did
I think
it the last
I think
two.
It goes dormant.
Okay, but it looks like a brown field.
No,
isn't it?
It goes
it looks
dormant. It's too hot. And right. Certain types of grasses don't like the 100 degrees or 92 degrees heat they get here in the summer. That's why it's closed. Anyways, they did all the fairways the last 2 years, and now there's less mud involved because there's a bit more sand underneath.
Well, do you remember last year, the practice day, we were still behind the 12th tee, and the last group had just gone through.
Crazy.
And there was a obviously the tee had been hit all day, divots all the way across.
Yeah.
10 minutes after the last group went through, a team of greenkeepers came in with the machine, and they got this machine on the back of the tee, and they quite literally lifted up the whole turf of where they hit from.
Really?
And then relayed brand new turf, and within 10 minutes you wouldn't have thought a single golfer had hit from that spot that same
day. That's unreal, but you know, it's
that's what they do.
You need money and you need manpower to do that, right?
You get to go to Champions Dinner every single year.
Yep.
I mean, what an incredible honour. It must be, you must hear some outrageous stories, funny stories. Whereabouts, I've spoke to Sir Nick Faldo, and he's telling me where he kind of normally sits. Where do you kind of gravitate towards? Do you have a regular spot on at the table? And how was this year's championship dinner?
Yeah, I usually sit near the head of the table. It just so happened as many years ago, I'm very close friends with Larry Mice. And so they have a three at the head of the table. Ben Crenshaw right now, used to be Byron Nelson. He's our representative sort of speaker. He says a few words. Then in the middle of the three is the defending champion, this year John Rahm, and then the chairman. And then you have a very long table, and three at the other end. And it's 34 of us this year. So I'm usually second. It's like the head table, Larry Myers, then myself, and then it was Scotty Scheffler and Zach Johnson. So just, yeah, I love those guys. Scotty is a fellow believer, so is Larry Myers, and we just feel like we have something in common there. And that's why I usually sit. The dinner was phenomenal. The food was really outstanding, as it usually is. Really, really tasty. The camaraderie was terrific. What the special thing about this year's dinner was, it was would have been Seve Ballesteros' 67th birthday, and John Rahm brought that up, and obviously we had Sergio Garcia and Olazabal in the room. And so when the dinner was officially over, we usually tell stories or jokes, you know, a few of us get up and share something, either from the past or...
I mean, imagine being a fly on the wall in that room. Yeah, I mean...
So we talked a bit about Seve Ballesteros, you know, so Olazabal got up and told one or two Ryder Cup stories because he was paired with him a lot. And then I know several Seve stories that are quite funny, so I shared a few with many of them hadn't heard yet. And, you know, and then Tom Watson said something about... the LIV Tour and the PGA Tour and how, you know, how good it is to have everybody together.
Yeah, how did that go down?
It was very quick, and he just got up and says, it's great to have everyone here again. And he sat down again.
That was
and we all said, yeah, but, you know, there's a problem. I mean, you know, how is that going to look in the future? I mean, he's right, but it's only happening four times a year.
Yeah.
And it's caused a lot of strife and a lot of issues. So anyway, so we had a great evening, you know. Good food, good camaraderie, and nice stories.
Did he bring a private chef in this year, John Rahm, or was that?
He had his own guy that did it, I think.
That's so cool.
Which is unusual, but they, you know, generally I didn't do it when I served the two dinners because they're so good. The chefs, they look up recipes and they make it extremely authentic. It's hard to make very good German food the way I was used to it, but it was fantastic. You know, the spätzle they made and the dumplings and the red cabbage, it was just like my mom made it at home, which is just, that's hard to do.
I bet.
I've tried lots of German restaurants in America and England. That just doesn't do it.
when Sunday comes round and the new champion is crowned, there's a little bit you think, oh, what's going to be for food next year? Do you think what's going to be on the menu?
It's not necessarily the first thought, but sooner or later it becomes part of the talk. Yeah. Wonder what we're going to get. Is it going to be hamburger or is it something better?
you mentioned there you sit next to Scottie Scheffler. Mm-hmm. His run for the last 2 or 3 years has been nothing short of remarkable.
Oh, it's just incredible. And he's so down to earth, you know, such a likable guy, no ego whatsoever. No, I'm number one in the world or whatever, nothing whatsoever. And so we talked, obviously, several times during that 2 hours. And the conversation came up, and like, how many wedges? Do you have 4 wedges in your bag or 3? Because it's a common thing amongst pros. Some have 3, some have 4. And he goes, I have 4. So I'm going, so if you have 4, which iron are you throwing out, right? Because you can only have 14 clubs.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, I go driver, 3 wood, 3 iron. I'm going, really? So you don't have a 2 iron or 5 wood or no 1 iron. So
seems like a big gap.
Yeah, so my first thought was big gap. So I said, how far do you hit your 3 wood? 265. 265 in carry. Oh, yeah. And I go, so you must have a huge gap from your 3 wood to your 3 iron. How far is your 3 iron go? 245. I went, what? He said, yeah, I made it a little stronger.
All right.
But so it's like, like a 2 or 2.5. But I'm thinking 3 iron, 245.
Yeah.
I hit my 3 iron, 200. Yes. So that just tells you the difference right there. And then I go, so what's your 4 iron? 225. I'm like, well, you're playing a different game than I'm playing.
You might
playing.
Need 5 wedges. You might not have enough down the other side of the table.
So he, you know, in the old school was you have 10 to 12 yards between each club. He's got 20 yards in those longer clubs.
Yeah.
And then it goes to 15, and then it goes to 13. Yeah. So very, you know, very well thought out, because many of us would love to have 15 clubs or 16, but we're only allowed 14. Caddies wouldn't love it, but the players would.
who do you think's got a real chance this week? I know it's really hard. I know it's a difficult question.
I get asked that constantly, even 30 years ago. Who's your favorite? And I said 40 of them, and I meant it. There's 40 of them.
Yeah.
Right now, Bryson is 7 under. He wouldn't have been one of the favorites.
No.
Right? Not necessarily. But I heard he's actually been playing pretty good. He's got the 3rd best scoring average on the LIV Tour this year.
Yeah.
I think number one was, his name?
It'd have probably been Joachim Niemann.
Yeah, Niemann was first. Rahm was second.
I think Sergio's done well on that tour as well this year.
Probably. Rahm was second and he was 3rd. So that tells me he's been playing good, you know. Even though they may play different golf courses or whatever, you still got to do it. Doesn't matter what the setup is. So anyways, you know, favorites are probably Scheffler. You have to mention him. Rahm has the best scoring average around here for the last 15 rounds or something.
All right.
And, well, for everybody that's played at least 15. Yeah. So Scheffler may not have played 15.
No, his maybe he's not.
His might may be year. Lower than Rahm's once he gets to 15. And then, you have dark horses like Jordan Spieth, who always pops up here, even though he's not playing great, but he likes this golf course. And you like to throw Rory in there, even though it hasn't been his best year yet.
So let's just quickly talk about that, Rory, because that's that I mentioned to you earlier. So Rory McIlroy's scoring average for the 4 rounds. The first round, he's giving almost a shot back to the field. Then he gains half a shot. Then he gains nearly 3 and then nearly 5 in round 4. And it tends to be that could be just as much psychologically as you said, it rotates, how difficult it is. The pins are very similar here.
You know, I don't pay attention to all that. No? Sorry.
Okay.
Because it can be totally coincidental. You know, you could have 2 Sundays with a 30 mile an hour wind in 3 years, and the scoring is 5 shots higher than no wind, and it's not Rory, it's just the conditions. But it could be. Every once in a while, it could be the player. But then you would think, well, if Rory can't stand the pressure, how come he's one of the best?
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's the pressure. I think it's the psychology, maybe. Like, you know, the fact
that is the pressure. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Well, sure, yeah.
To me, it is. Yeah. You know, either you you embrace the pressure,
yeah,
and you thrive in it, like Nicholas and Tiger and some others, or you cringe and falter and fall away. You know, there's been many players. You can look at the history of the game. You know, Payne Stewart was one of them. He was second, third, mm-hmm. fifth. Couldn't win for 5 years or something. Then he won his first, and then he kept winning. So there's psychological Absolutely. Pressure. I call it pressure. You call it psychological. It's there is tremendous pressure. Tiger Woods was interviewed a couple of days ago and said he always felt pressure. People come to me and say, you're not nervous anymore, right? I mean, you've been doing... I say, are you kidding me? I'm nervous every shot. I'm out there. I'm nervous. But how nervous?
Of course. You know, and how do you deal with it?
Yeah, exactly. And if you're a little nervous, it actually helps because it heightens your awareness.
Senses.
It slows things down. But yeah. if you get too nervous, everything is too quick, too speedy, and you just make bad decisions and you know, your knees are literally shaking. Yeah. You're just, it's an out-of-body experience. And you turn around and you shot 76 or something. How did that happen? You know, yesterday I shot 66. Now I'm shooting 76.
Well, I wonder whether it's to do with an aggressiveness. Like, did you find that, you know, Tiger had the same thing that famous year where he was like 5 or 6 over after 9 holes and then literally went on a crazy tear for the rest of the week? With Rory, could it be that, you know, he's playing conservatively and then all of a sudden he's a long way back, he has no choice but to get aggressive?
It could be that or the opposite. So it could be both. So either he's not aggressive enough or he feels like, oh, I'm 6 behind, I better be more aggressive. Mm. And if you don't play really well, aggressiveness will bite you because you're going to hit some shots where you just didn't hit a good shot and you short side yourself, put it in the water, you put it in the trees, and then you're making a double, a triple by being aggressive. But I totally agree. You have to play aggressive if you want to win because you got 89 players out yeah. there. Some of them will play aggressive and play well, yeah. and they're going to do it. And if you just play, you know, for safety, middle of the green, that's not gonna do it.
I can imagine a future where if he gets one, he'll have multiple jackets, Rory, and I think he'd get past that point. What's your career goals now? What do you set goals?
Yeah, I do, and my biggest goal and has been for many years is to be the best that I can be. Because I know when Bernard Langer plays at his best, he has a chance on most courses. And
Some would say unbeatable.
Not necessarily. There's some courses, you know, like the only tournament I played this year was in Hawaii, our first one on the Champions Tour. It was wide open. The fairways were wide open. No rough. It was a bomber's paradise, what I call it. So
doesn't suit your game.
No. It does. That course used to suit me when it had narrow fairways and rough, and they changed it, and now I have to play brilliant to finish fourth or third, you know. So there's some courses that are just not suitable, but in general, if I play 25 tournaments a year, I think I can win on 20 of them, you know, if I play really, really good. Wow. But I can't afford to make a lot of mistakes with my lengths, because even on the Champions Tour, I'm 60th in driving distance now when I used to be top 10. And it's age, you know. I'm 66 playing against 50, 51 year olds.
Do you think the who are you excited but also somewhat apprehensive about hitting that milestone of being able to join the Champions Tour? Is there any golfers that are soon to hit it maybe these next couple of years that you think, oh, they're going to be a big competitor for me?
You know, I haven't looked at it, but we've had some big names join us, like Ernie Els, for instance, Retief Goos and Jim Furyk. You know, really solid major winners, proven winners for many years, Hall of Famers. You know, when they come out, yeah, you pay attention. You know, they're gonna do well, or they should do well. But surprisingly, there has been a few that I would have thought would make a huge impact and do well. How many do you think Ben Crenshaw has won on the Champions Tour?
Not as many as he should have done, I'm guessing.
Zero.
Wow.
The best putter, one of the best putters, and, you know, won 20 tournaments on the tour, two Masters. Zero. How about Corey Pavin?
Again, not as many as he should have done.
One.
Wow.
You know, incredible short game, right? Incredible competitor.
Course.
Never lost his card throughout his life. played in many Ryder Cups, won the US Open, and you know, so it tells you how tough it is to win out there.
It's not a given, is it?
As one, but it's also, you know, I just saw those two in particular because they are fantastic putters and good short game, and when you have that, all you got to do is kind of find it, you know, hit it somewhere where you can find it. But it was a bit like Seve, you know. Seve, in the later days, he lost his swing with a driver, right? He was still brilliant from 100 yards, 150 yards in, but he had to get there and he couldn't.
It's painful to see sometimes.
It is.
Is it a good
I played with David Duval here one time, and he was number one in the world. I think it was 2001 or something. Won the Open Championship and beat Tiger and beat everybody for months in a row, and he was number one. And then shortly after that, I was paired with him here. He had no idea where that driver went. It went left, it went right. He was in the trees constantly and shot a really high number and just lost his game.
And would you put it down to almost yips?
You're going to have the yips driving the ball, I suppose. Thank goodness I never had that. I had plenty of yips with a putter, but not with the long game.
And how did you get over that? Because I feel like I've got catching and caught.
Don't say it. Somewhat got rid of it. Don't say the word on
my short chips round the green. But like, how is it practice? Is it a complete change of technique? Do you have to do something quite radical that, you know, you see?
I did radical change in putting. Yeah. You know, just totally different grip to maybe, you know, trick my mind or my brain or something and make it feel different. And then once you find something where you feel more comfortable, then you gain confidence and then it's all good again, you know. But in my case, it came back several times. And same with chipping. Now you see a few guys play cock-handed or cross-handed.
Yeah, Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, Vijay Singh's been doing it for years. You know, and you wonder, well, why is that? You know, what's going on? Or years ago, Tiger Woods was supposed to have the yips chipping or something, and he's didn't back to normal. Yeah. So I'm not sure if there's, you know, something for everybody, or if everybody needs something different to get out of it, to get over it. What if it all works for this with the same remedy?
Definitely.
Let's put it that way. So, in my case, it was just changing grips and get a different feel altogether.
You do need to do something almost quite revolutionary and quite shocking, really.
Potentially, yeah. We actually talked a little bit about driving. Be remiss of us not to talk a little bit about Mercedes-Benz, who we're here with this week. We've had an absolutely phenomenal time. I'd love to know what car you're currently driving. Rick and I recently got our first Mercedes-Benz, which we're absolutely loving. Tell us a bit about the vehicle you're in right now.
Well, I've driven a lot of them throughout the years, and I was fortunate enough to go from, you know, two-seater sports cars to the big SUV, and right now we have grandkids. We need space and room.
You need a big one.
So I need a big one, and I like a strong engine. So I'm with the 53 AMG.
Nice.
And love that car. You know, just put a roof thing on top. If we built a house in North Carolina as well, so I can throw a bunch of luggage in there. And it's got plenty of power, road handling, everything I want. You know, just safety. I sit a little higher because it's and I feel
I like a high rise seat as well.
Very
comfortable. I get that seat straight up there all the way. My wife sometimes comes in and gets it a little bit too near the front, but yeah. I like that one. You talked a bit about grandchildren there. How old are your grandchildren?
We have four of them. They're all under the age of four. So one is the oldest, four, 2 3-year-olds, and 1 2-year-old.
So my children are a similar age. For the first time last weekend, my son, who's three, out of absolutely nowhere, just said to me, "Daddy, can we go to the golf course and show me how to hit?" And it was like Cupid's arrow hit me straight
in
the heart.
Why were you like waiting so long?
I know, exactly. But I'd love to know from someone, you know, who knows as much as you do about the game of golf, what would be your strategy for helping a young child develop the same passion without being a little bit too, you know, coercive, should we say?
Right. Well, there's different approaches, but I always thought the best approach would be make sure they have fun. Because if you force them and push them, they're going to just turn away from it eventually. And a 3, 4, 5-year-old, their attention span is generally very short. So, you know, it'd be unique if he wants to hit balls for an hour on the driving range and then go play 18 holes. That would be unique, right? But So make it fun, you know, let him hit out of the bunker or whatever, yeah. And putt, because that's something a three-year-old can do.
Yeah.
Okay. And they can get a reward from putting.
Yeah.
Getting the ball in the hole is satisfying.
Yeah.
Let him kick it, let him throw it, let him do whatever. Yeah,
yeah. You know, tee the ball up on the driving range and let him hit it. But key is maybe they have the right equipment too. There's a company called US Kids or something.
They make
fantastic clubs for, you know, 3-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 7-year-olds, and all the way up. And they're all very light, small grips, short, all of that. So the kids have fun and they can hit the ball.
I find with my daughter, if I just get it, then it's pink. She's quite happy. So we've got pink golf balls, pink putter, then she's all in. So
the golf bag and the head covers, everything's got to work. Yeah,
that's it.
Get new shoes or a little outfit or a cap or something.
We went shopping in the Masters store yesterday. I got some nice bits with the kids, yeah.
Each year, you can't. We've been a couple of years now, again, very thankful to Mercedes-Benz. We've raided the gift shop.
Yeah, well, you think you did. Just stand there for 10 minutes and see how the people come
it's
out
crazy.
With enormous bags. And nowadays, they all many of them just ship it. But it was fun. I would just watch them, you know, at the end of the day come out. In the old days, when the shipping wasn't so easily accessible, they carried all these heavy bags, one over the shoulder and three here and five over there and, you know, thousands of dollars. But that's what happens. Everybody has friends, and you know, would you bring me this? Would you bring me that? You know, and you end up buying. You feel like you're buying the store, but you don't. They have truckloads coming every night and replenishing.
I believe they're doing $10 million a day in the
store.
Right.
Yeah. Yes,
crazy.
That's how they can make all those nice changes on the golf course.
Yeah, right? Part of it. Yeah,
part of the funding, definitely. It's been a pleasure talking
to you.
Thank you. Really has
enjoyed it.
Good luck with your recovery.
Thank you.
Yep. Hopefully you're back properly hitting balls. And have you got a time frame for that? Is that in the near future?
Well, I'm already chipping and pitching and putting, and I've actually hit a few full 9-irons the other day, so it felt okay.
Good.
Nice.
First tournament is
back. Don't know yet.
To be confirmed.
Whatever the doctor allows.
Yeah.
But
are you pushing that as well? Are you trying to?
I am pushing, and they're holding me back. And when I say they, it's the surgeon and the PT. You know, And somebody said the other day, nobody has come back too late. And I'm thinking about it.
Yeah,
maybe
that's
some
a good
truth
point.
To that. A lot of guys came back too soon and re-injured themselves. I don't want to be in that category. So maybe it's better to wait another 2 weeks and then come back, or 4 weeks, whatever it is.
Well, good luck with your tournaments this year.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Good luck with your preparation for actually hanging up the Augusta.
Emotional preparation.
The Masters coming jacket next year.
I'm not thinking about that.
No, we'll worry about
now,
that later.
But it's tough enough not being out there right now. So
I can imagine.
I'm trying to stay positive and enjoy what I have.
Well, what this year you lost out on and what Augusta lost out on, we gained on, because you could sit down here, chat to our wonderful audience and share your incredible stories, and I'm sure they all really appreciate it. So again, Bernard, thanks for your time. Good luck with your recovery, and I can't wait to see you walking down the 18th next year
on Sunday
with a tear in my eye
waving goodbye, hopefully Sunday.
Friday or Sunday. Who knows. I'm hopefully there clapping you and waving you off in style.
It'll be very emotional, I know that, but it'll be a good day.
Thank you very much
for your
time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.